Come, spellweavers, reavers, rogues, and men-at-arms, and answer the call of adventure. Pick up your sword, your axe, your spellbook, your bow, your rulebook, and your dice, and join the forces of good in their eternal fight against vile monsters, conspiring min-maxers, horny bards, and blood-soaked murder hobos. Discover the treasure trove of role-playing games here on Rollin' Bones. My name is Ryan Howard, and I shall be your guide. Good evening, Boneheads, and welcome back to Rollin' Bones with Ryan Howard, where we are making old school young again. I'm your host and king of the Boneheads, Ryan Howard, and we've got breaking news tonight! Ah! Bombshell! But first, remember to like, share, and subscribe if you enjoy what you see here on Rollin' Bones. I want to remind everyone that you can find me on the following social media pages. I am at X and Instagram. I am at Howard underscore Ryan Gregg. YouTube is Rollin' Bones. Twitch is twitch.tv/RollinBonesRyan. And Substack is RollinBones.substack.com. Substack is where you can go to hear all of my unfiltered gaming opinions, where you can find, all the developer diaries for my upcoming work. Lots of different articles, lots of thoughts about role-playing games that just get posted over there on my Substack. So definitely go over there. And for those of you who are interested in the development diaries side of things, that stuff is all paywalled. It is premium only, just one so I can protect, some of my secrets for people who are, coming out there. But also, it's premium only so that, I can get a little bit of support. And so people who want kind of that inside baseball of what's going on with Guts and Glory, you can find that over on Substack under the premium only articles. You can also find my adventure, Onight Divine, over on DriveThruRPG. The link to that is there in the chat, and you will find all this stuff in the pinned comments. And of course, I want to remind everyone that you can find my merch for Rollin' Bones over on TeePublic. The link to that is here in chat as well. All right, so with that out of the way, let's get to the breaking news. There is no breaking news. No, there's none. Obviously, there's none. You guys know. This isn't new. This is Let's go ahead and share this article here. We'll present my screen just so that we can see what I'm talking about here. And so we're gonna take a look at Resident Joker's Dice Breaker here. Shot. Dungeons & Dragons maker reportedly looks at Tencent to sell future video games like Baldur's Gate 3. Chaser. Update. Wizards of the Coast provides the following statement to Dicebreaker. Original article follows. We regularly talk to Tencent and enjoy multiple partnerships with them across a number of our IPs. We don't make a habit of commenting on internet rumors, but to be clear, we are not looking to sell our D&D IP. We will keep talking to partners about how we bring the best digital experiences to our fans. We won't comment any further on speculation or rumors about potential M&A or licensing deals. So, good job there, Chase Carter. Way to go. Way to go. Now, not to beat up too much on Chase here. He was not alone. he was not the only one who fell for this. In fact, a great number of RPG luminaries fell for this nonsense, including people that I have respect for, like Professor Dungeon Master. And really what I want to talk about tonight is this clickbait nonsense that RPG discourse has devolved into. And this is inevitable. Like this is just what happens on the internet now. Like this is what the quartering does. This is what, you know, people like Tim Pool now do. There's all sorts of political and cultural pundits out there who just essentially do thumbnails like the one that I did for tonight's show, which, by the way, I'm super proud of that thumbnail. That I don't talk about my thumbnails very often on the show. Every now and then I pull out something that I think is just brilliant, and tonight was one of them. So, you know, if you guys will let me kind of indulge myself a little bit, I laughed while making that thumbnail. But just to bring people up to speed who don't already know, yeah, that the story about D&D being sold to Tencent is nonsense. It was speculated on by another RPG YouTuber. I don't remember who. Someone in chat can remind me. It was basically just this video, kind of like a Reddit tier. Hey, Larian Studios made a good video game, so they're totally qualified to create a pen and paper RPG, right? Right? That was the crux of the argument. Was that Larian Studios, who is owned by Tencent, or at least partially owned by Tencent, would be a good steward of the IP, at least better than what Hasbro has been, because, you know, their leadership loves the game, and you know, their fans, and Lord knows that people who say, you know, we're fans, we love this IP, those are always 100% the best stewards of an IP. That's never blown up in anyone's face. As Malachi is saying here in chat, Tencent owns about 30% of Larian Studios. So they are a minority owner, a major investor. They also, anyone who is familiar with the Epic Games Store has heard of this company as well, because they're heavily invested in Epic, multiple different gaming companies. Basically, Tencent is a Chinese mega corporation, which, for those of you unfamiliar with the way that business and politics are run in Beijing, means they're essentially a business arm of the Chinese Communist Party. But they have been making massive moves in tech for years now. It's for 10 years, basically. It's been Tencent is buying, stakes in this company and that company, and they're, you know, putting all this money into Western game developers, and also, there's lots of issues with privacy and data breaches and stuff like that. And now there's the speculation that this global mega corporation is going to be buying up D&D. And this comes, this rumor was given credence by, honestly, like, now that I look at it, a very sketchy website. Like, let me show this to you guys. Someone in Beijing is now like aware of all of my social media presence because I'm looking at this probably. This news aggregator website is the source that a whole bunch of these influencers cited. And it's word for word the original video, like point for point, the original video that speculated that Larian Studios would be a good steward of the D&D IP. And it's kind of like this this old meme from back when the Marvel Cinematic Universe still had some like creative life in it, where people on Reddit would just, you know, spam over and over again, Fox should just give the X-Men back to Marvel. It reeks, like, the argument reeks of that, you know, Hasbro should just hand the IP over to Larian Studios. They clearly don't care about it, and Larian would be so much better at running this thing. And yes, Hasbro does not care about D&D, not in the way that you and I care about D&D. That being said, Larian Studios is first and foremost a tech company, a video game developer. What do they know? And it's not even like, what do they know about game design? They obviously know a lot about game design. What do they know about publishing? What do they know about creating like physical books? That's more the concern than, you know, what do they know about running a game? Like, what do they know about creating a good playable game? I'm sure they know plenty, but there's two sides to running an RPG company. As I'm very quickly finding out, there is the making a good product, and then there is the being able to sell and market and produce that product in a timely fashion, in a cost-effective fashion, and in a way that's, you know, accessible for people. I am very much learning on the job how to do something like that. And let me tell you, it's not easy. It's not as easy as people might think it is. But beyond just going over how this story duped a whole bunch of people, I want to talk tonight about why, even if D&D was being bought up by Tencent, it doesn't actually matter. And I'm going to do that by using a little bit of an illustration. Before we get into that, though, Greg Gillespie is in the house. Hey, Greg, I hope you are recovering well. Reach out to me and let me know when you would like to do the episode that we talked about. But I'm glad that you are in here, and I hope you are recovering well from your surgery. So I was thinking about this while I was kind of reading up on this, you know, is D&D being sold to Tencent? Have any of you who are watching this, any of you who are in chat right now, have any of you seen a Packard automobile? Not everyone at once, but has anyone out here seen a Packard automobile? Do you know what I am talking about when I mention the Packard automobile? And I'm sure everyone out there who's my age and younger probably doesn't even know what I'm talking about. Calvinoni here in chat has seen a Packard. Packard was a very early auto manufacturer, and they were the height of luxury in their day. They came around, I believe they predate the Ford Motor Company. And they were top of the line, best of the best cars that you could possibly get. To have a Packard was to be a high roller from like 1905, maybe even earlier, all the way up to the 1930s. And now, can you buy a brand new Packard? No. You absolutely cannot buy a brand new Packard because Packard merged with Studebaker in the 1940s, I believe, maybe the 1950s. So Packard and Studebaker become one company, and the Packard name is discontinued. And now Studebaker. Cal, if you've seen a Packard, I'm sure you've seen a Studebaker. So yeah, Malachi points out 1954, Packard and Studebaker merge with each other. So a Studebaker. So more of you out there might actually know about this. In fact, Cal says his grandparents had a Studebaker. And just for a little bit more background, Malachi is saying that Packard started in 1899. So yes, they definitely predated the Ford Motor Company. Same with Duesenberg. Duesenberg also the height of luxury. That's where we get the phrase doozy from, because these Duesenberg automobiles were so fancy. And nowadays, haven't seen any of them, have you? So let's get back to Studebaker. What happened to Studebaker? Well, around the 1960s, they merge with another company, and eventually Studebaker gets bought out. And I traced it all the way up to present day, the ownership of Studebaker. Studebaker is now owned because a conglomerate swallowed a conglomerate, by a company called Eaton. Eaton manufactures electronic components, and I know this because at my day job, I sell Eaton products. They don't make cars. So two automobile companies that in their day were considered top of the heap are now just gone. No one uses the name anymore. They were swallowed up by a corporate merger that got swallowed up by another corporate merger that got bought out by another corporate merger. This is the inevitable path of things. This is just what happens. You can even see this outside of the automobile world. RKO Pictures in the 1930s was a big movie studio. It no longer exists. There's comic book companies out there like CrossGen. CrossGen was this up-and-coming comic book company that had a lot of money behind it, a lot of promise, a lot of top flight creators, Mark Waid, Chuck Dixon, several fantastic artists, Steve Epting was one of the artists there. CrossGen got bought out by Disney because Disney wanted to use them as a kind of inroad with the boys market. And then Disney never did anything with them and ended up buying Marvel instead. So to get out of the corporate world and stop talking about cars and electronics and comic books and movies, let's bring this back into the realm of D&D. We have already seen D&D go from a tough-as-nails startup made by two guys with a dream to being a big business, to being swallowed up by another big business that eventually got swallowed up by a multinational toy company. What's going to happen? Eventually, Hasbro is not going to last forever. Eventually, Hasbro and its IP will be either pieced up and sold off to different companies or swallowed up by another larger company, whether that's Tencent or Walt Disney or, whoever. As Qui-Gon Jinn said in The Phantom Menace, there's always a bigger fish. And at some point, that bigger fish is going to come for D&D. And at some point, D&D will cease to exist as even a set of initials. Right now, D&D pretty much exists only as a set of initials. And it will continue to exist as a set of initials only for a limited time, only as long as that set of initials sells something. And the only way for that set of initials to sell something is for it to serve as a piece of branding, a seal of quality that Hasbro can slap on the cover of a book, and people will see that logo and hear the name Dungeons and Dragons and think back to their fond childhood memories, and then they will pick it up because this also says Dungeons and Dragons. And in the consumer's mind, this equals that thing that they loved back in the day. And so just being honest, 98% of them have no idea about the corporate machinations that have led to Hasbro now owning the IP that is Dungeons and Dragons. And with the way that Hasbro has been treating this IP and the way that Dungeons and Dragons has evolved or devolved, whatever your thoughts are on it, over just the past couple years, eventually that name, that set of initials, D&D, is not going to have any value whatsoever. And once it ceases to have any value, it's going to get parked in the corporate intellectual property equivalent of that warehouse from Raiders of the Lost Ark. And maybe someday it'll get dusted off, or eventually it'll end up in the public domain. And, something like what Malachi is mentioning here in chat. The Silver Knight Group owns the Studebaker trademark, and they want to bring the name back in 2025. So Studebaker. It's not the same Studebaker. It's not the Studebaker carriage company that began back in the early 1800s anymore. Those people were bought out, who were bought out by other people, on and on and on. Now this conglomerate Silver Knight Group owns the name, and they're going to bring it back and slap it on a car that is not a classic Studebaker because that name has a certain amount of cachet with certain people. Like, you know, Jonathan Frost says here in chat, name recognition. So things come, you know, they go in and out of fashion. The same thing happened with Studebaker back in the day that's now happening with D&D. Eventually, that name no longer had the cachet that it once had, and it was retired. And now someone sees that there's some kind of value, some kind of nostalgia to be extracted from the name, and they are going to resurrect it to sell the product. I think a lot of people have forgotten that, like, this is the way of things. Things fall apart. Nothing lasts forever. Nothing lasts forever. Intellectual property is not eternal. For every pulp hero that you know about today, for every Doc Savage and the Shadow and the Phantom and Conan the Barbarian and Solomon Kane, there are a million others who you don't remember at all. Maybe someone out there does, but for the majority of the population, you know, you could walk up to any person of a certain age, let's say, like, you know, 70, 80 years old, and say, who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of man? And they may likely be able to say, the Shadow knows. But, you know, if you start talking to them about something a little bit more obscure, you start talking to them about the original Daredevil comic book hero from the 1930s, not Marvel's, but the original Daredevil, Dare-Devil, they might know who that is, but they probably won't. They probably don't remember ever buying a Bullet Man comic book. Or, you know, they don't know who the Black Terror is. Some of you out there may know who that is. Again, it's a Golden Age comic book character that is now public domain. But this is just the way of things. Even things that were, you know, massive cultural juggernauts in their day decay. Planet of the Apes. Planet of the Apes was humongous. People still know what it is. There were Planet of the Apes movies, you know, just a few years ago. But slapping the Planet of the Apes logo and that actor's name, Roddy, yeah, putting Caesar from Planet of the Apes on a lunchbox is not going to immediately guarantee that you sell lunchboxes the way that it did in 1965. And again, I keep, you know, repeating this point over and over again. That's just the way that things go. And this will, Roddy McDowell, thank you, Calvinoni. You can't slap Roddy McDowell's face on a lunchbox like you could in 1966, 1967, 1971, and, you know, sell products like you could back in those days. You can't do that anymore. Even though people still kind of remember Planet of the Apes. And yes, Charlton Heston was in the original as well, but Roddy McDowell was Caesar, the ape. And he was the one that came back for multiple movies, which is why I keep bringing his name back up. That, and he was the Mad Hatter in Batman the Animated Series. Fun fact, for anyone out there who doesn't know that. But yeah, again, like, eventually there will be a handful of people who remember Dritz Duwerden. You know, they remember reading the Dragonlance novels. But you know, it's not going to be the number of people that we have now. Even now, the percentage of the population that the name Sturm Brightblade means anything to is pretty small. And that percentage is only going to get smaller as the IP continues to degrade. I'm sorry. My apologies to Yodano. Dragonlance will pass out of cultural memory because it's already on the way out. So, like, that's just the way of things. And while this is depressing, you know, while this is difficult to think about and difficult to swallow, we have to accept that this is the way things are. And we have to move past it. We can't keep these things alive forever. We can't expect them to continuously produce the same quality that they always did. In my article that I wrote about the 50th anniversary of D&D, I talked about how a lot of these IPs feel like kind of a Weekend at Bernie's situation, where someone is puppeteering the corpse of a beloved family member and telling you that they're still alive and they're, you know, just as good as they always were. When in reality, all they're doing is marionetting a corpse. That when you try to keep these IPs alive in perpetuity and don't just let them lie in the period that they were popular in, and remember them fondly, remember and cherish the memories that you have of discovering these things. When you try to continuously recreate that over and over and over again, all you're doing is trying to reanimate a dead body. And so instead of doing that, why don't we focus on taking those fond memories and using them as fuel to create something new? I don't know if you guys know this or not, but Rex Teal's connection is currently being slow, and he wants to know how much he missed. So, again, not to overuse analogies here, but what if instead of making Star Wars, George Lucas had just decided that he was going to make more Dune novels? All George Lucas is going to do now is he is going to knock out Frank Herbert, who was still alive when he was writing Star Wars. He's just going to, you know, knock out Frank Herbert, steal the IP from him, and now George Lucas is in charge of Dune. That would have been complete nonsense. We wouldn't have Star Wars. We would not have Star Wars. We wouldn't have all the things that Star Wars inspired. And we'd just be left with this IP, with the life being constantly sucked out of it in Dune, with George Lucas now at the controls. And so, because then, you know, eventually someone would knock out George Lucas and say, the Dune IP now belongs to me and I'm in charge of it. But instead, George Lucas took his infatuation with Dune and took his infatuation with the Western and the Samurai movie and Saturday morning movie serials and mix them all together in this blender in his mind and created Star Wars. And he had a lot of help with that. He had a lot of different influences. And, you know, say what you will about Lucas the creative or Lucas the director or Lucas the writer, George Lucas took a bunch of different IPs that were popular in their days. He took Dune, he took Flash Gordon, he took, you know, Malachi's helping me out here. Flash Gordon was definitely an inspiration. World War II movies were all the rage when Lucas was a kid. you know, he took pulp, he took Kurosawa samurai movies, mixes them all together, you know, adds in a dash of Western, adds in some heroic fantasy, adds in a heaping helping of Campbell's monomyth, and, you know, mixes them up, puts the batter in a cake pan, and then bakes this cake that is now Star Wars. That's what George Lucas did in the 1970s. And that's what Jack Kirby did in creating a whole bunch of these characters that we're now seeing done to death. You can see the influences of Shakespeare in Thor and, you know, obviously Norse mythology. You can see the influences of Ayn Rand when you look at Steve Ditko's creations. You can see all kind, you can see the DNA of different IPs when you really closely examine all of these different new IPs. New, most of them are, you know, from 1939 to like 1976 that we're talking about here today. You can see the DNA. You can see the shadow in Sherlock Holmes in Batman. You can see Doc Savage in Superman. But you can also see how these things are new, how they iterate on the ideas before. Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster didn't just create their own Doc Savage. They mixed Doc Savage with a couple different ideas, a couple different concepts, and created Superman. Bob Kane wanted to just rip off the Shadow. Bill Finger kind of brought in some other influences and imposed some creativity on the concept and created Batman as we know it. This is the way that great IP has been created all throughout history. You can see how other cultures' mythologies influence the new mythology. You can see the DNA of the Homeric epic when you read the cycles of King Arthur. You can, you know, see all of these different influences when you examine the way that stories are told. You can even find authors directly shouting out their influences in antiquity. I mean, everything we know about Socrates, for example, was basically fan fiction written by Plato. So, again, you see people iterating on ideas, iterating on concepts. Why is it that we've lost the ability to do that? Why are we no longer looking at things that we love? Like, you know, let's use an example for me. You guys can see behind me. I like Batman. That's Cryptozoics, The Dark Knight Returns board game. They're behind me. And if I turn slightly and like drop my shoulder, you might be able to see the Batman the Animated Series game behind me as well. You know, you can see that I love fantasy. Obviously, I have influences from my familial ties to Robert E. Howard. I've got varied interests. What would happen if I mixed those interests together and created some kind of IP? I'm trying to do that. When I talk to people about what Nighthaven is, a lot of times I'm mentioning these different stories, these different elements that have influenced what Nighthaven is. I can't count the number of times I've told people that it's Fawford and the Grey Mouser meets Sin City. Like that's what Nighthaven is at the end of the day. It's a mixture. It's a mutt. It's a combination. But that's how you get new ideas. That's how we get new people. You mix DNA together, and a new person is the result of that. That's where babies come from, boys and girls. That is the essence of creation. And we create because we are created. And I firmly believe that. Why are we now no longer doing that? There's a number of reasons. Nihilism has certainly become a big reason why we're not doing that anymore. It's almost a, you know, what's the point? there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people who now are in positions of power who just want to see the old stuff. They just want to hear the hits over and over again. They don't want to hear new stuff. And so a lot of creatives are going, well, what's the point? What's the point of even trying to pitch a new idea when they just want to hear what franchise from the 80s are we going to resurrect this week? How are we going to reboot Skeleton Warriors for modern audiences? How are we going to bring back Universal Soldier? What are we going to do with Cobra? That's what so many creative meetings are now. Which franchise from the 80s or 90s or now, I guess, the early 2000s, we're starting to see, can we resurrect? What can we Dr. Frankenstein this week? And so I get it. It's an uphill battle. It's an uphill battle against a world of stagnation. And yeah, Cal in chat is making a good point here. For monetization purposes, I won't put that up here. But yeah, there's a lot of things out there that are numbing people. There's a lot of product that is put out into the world that is designed to keep people docile and numb and just addicted and endlessly consuming. A lot of our food is like this. A lot of our entertainment is like this. There's a lot of things that just continue this cycle of consume product and wait for next product, as Red Letter Media said. And so doing this now is radically countercultural. It's a rebellion against the status quo to say we're not going to continuously lean on Gen X nostalgia, or now millennial nostalgia as things are moving on. But really, honestly, Gen X nostalgia is real bad, guys. You've heard me talk about this on the show before, but Gen X nostalgia is poison at this point. It's creative poison. I'm sorry to all my Gen Xers out there, but that's what so much of this is. And Scott, Orcus Dorcas, I have started reading Palladium. I'm sorry to make this seem like a wake. I'm hoping that I can, you know, at the end here, make this more hopeful. Because I will say this. I'm going to read a couple super chats here. But this is not the first time this has happened. This is not the first time that we have faced cultural stagnation and had to come out the other side. So here, Doc Flamingo, I think there's plenty of creativity out there. We just can't rely on the old gatekeepers anymore because they are in their death throes. I agree 100%. There's a lot of people out there with ideas. And the old gatekeepers are, they are clinging desperately to their powers. They are seeing their mortality slowly slip away from them. And so they're desperately clinging to power that they have. And unfortunately, we all discover in the end that you can't take it with you. They're going to have to face their final judgment. They're going to have to stand before their creator just like everyone. And they're going to find out that, hey, yeah, you were a high-powered executive at Disney, Bob Iger, but that doesn't mean anything now that you have shuffled off this mortal coil. You know, like I just found out today, one of my favorite musicians, Toby Keith, passed away. You can all laugh at me for being a Toby Keith fan. I don't care. I enjoyed his music. But, you know, he had a lot of success in this life. But, you know, that success is now past him. And now he has to face his maker. And I don't know anything about his personal life. I'm not here to tell you that like Toby Keith is going to heaven or hell. It's just, you know, it's the reality of the situation. We have enjoyed you know, these things that have come out of, you know, this person's mind, this person's creative soul. But now, you know, they don't have the money and the prestige anymore. It's just their immortal soul and whether, you know, it's going to the good place or the bad place. And that depends on a lot of different things. This is not a theological discussion. So, you know, I think you all know my position on that, though. It's do you have a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ? And, you know, that's what determines where your immortal soul goes in the end. But, yeah, to get back to Doc Flamingo here, we are seeing these old guard gatekeepers in their death throes. And that's why so much feels stagnant, because it's literally decaying and dying, and new structures are going to have to be built to replace them. And then Wonky here, who you guys know, I've had lots of different conversations with Wonky online and offline about creative projects because we're business partners. Outside of the corporate world, I've personally seen much more of a wish they were still making cool shit like back in the day type vibe, a yearning for revival, not a rejection. And yeah, I mean, like, you can see it in the movie-going audience. A lot of people who are coming out of these big budget movies now don't, you know, they don't really care about what they saw. They, you know, they were entertained for 2 hours. They don't think about, you know, the themes, the deeper meanings of the movies. You know, they're not having discussions about the symbolism of Avengers Endgame, the way that we have conversations about Kubrick films. They're not talking about, you know, the latest Star Wars movie in the same way that we talk about films like Apocalypse Now or even something like The Big Lebowski. It's just kind of mindless entertainment for its own sake. It's an easily disposable, consumable product. And I think a lot of people are tired of that. They want something with substance. They want something with teeth. They want something that makes them think. And some of them, most of them, I'd say, probably don't even realize it. It's going to take something, you know, coming out of the clear blue sky for these people to realize, oh, yeah, there's more. There's more out there. And yeah, Jonathan Frost, I'm not down on the popcorn flick. Popcorn flicks have always been a thing. But even the popcorn flicks now are dull. Think about the dumb, fun action movies of the 1990s and the early 2000s versus the dumb, fun action movies of today. Think about the first Fast and the Furious versus the most recent Fast and the Furious. Think about Hard Boiled versus, I don't know, like whatever the most recent, here, you know, I'll kick over the anthill. Think about Hard Boiled versus one of the John Wick movies. The John Wick movies are cool. I like them. Hard Boiled's better. Sorry. It's more stylish. It's more fun. Not to say I don't, you know, not to say I don't like John Wick. I like the first three. I haven't seen the fourth one. But I don't think about those movies as, you know, definitive, big, you know, this is the most fun, interesting film. They're kind of cool. So it, like, even our mindless entertainment, we deserve a better class of. And to answer Scott here, Orcus Dorcus in chat, I actually do enjoy the Palladium book. For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, which is most of you, I was actually out in Scott's part of the world a couple weeks ago, and he gave me a copy of Palladium Fantasy 2nd Edition that I started reading, and I'm actually enjoying it. It's the first time I've read a Palladium book. So even though it is technically Gen X nostalgia, I'm enjoying it. It's, you know, it's fun. It's an interesting take. I kind of like the crunch. And Curse of Yig here is talking about this phenomenon of heartbreakers that we've seen for 20 years now. You know, you think, okay, this is going to be the next new game. This is going to be the new hotness. And then, oh, it's D&D with one cool feature. You know, again, that's a thing. That's a thing. And Doc Flamingo again, just look at podcasts. The media experts asserted forever that the public couldn't handle more than a 5-minute conversation on any topic. Now people eat up a 5-hour discussion fast as they come out. Yeah, I watch all of Mahler's videos as soon as they pop up. I love it. If I had the time and didn't have to work a day job, I'd make 5-hour videos about, you know, media topics that I wanted to talk about. But yeah, I mean, I think we've established here, we're now in a cultural malaise. We're in a period of cultural decline. Now what? Now what do we do? Have we ever been here before? Yes, we have been here before. As humans and as Americans, we have been in this state before. I mentioned George Lucas. George Lucas was part of a movement in the 60s and 70s of kind of young filmmakers with new ideas that were coming into a stagnant Hollywood. Hollywood was kind of down bad in the mid-60s. And I, like, seriously, a lot of people have forgotten about this because, I mean, like, why would you remember this? Again, most of us except Cal weren't around for it. Me especially. But yeah, the Hollywood was down bad. This was the peak of the Elvis movie. That's what cinema was for the longest time. There were these big budget flop disaster movies that kept coming out like one after another. There were all these different giant epics that ultimately kind of, you know, fell through. The Hollywood system was really hurting. And then you get this influx of kind of strange new ideas. You get these Sergio Leone spaghetti westerns from Europe. You get Sam Peckinpah making these really kind of violent, coarse, intense, and really like nasty, mean-spirited movies. You get this this surge of kind of cultural anger in these vigilante movies like Death Wish and Dirty Harry. And you get counterculture movies like Easy Rider. And then you start to get stuff like, you know, American Graffiti, which explores the, you know, the nostalgia for the 1950s. And then you start to move into these, you know, movies like Coppola's Apocalypse Now and The Godfather, where we're starting to look at, you know, stories by authors like Mario Puzo that are really kind of putting a new spin on the criminal world. And then you get something like Star Wars. And so you see over time, these movies, you know, evolve out of all these disparate movements, kind of coming out of, well, what we were doing previously wasn't working. Let's try something else. Let's try something weird, something bizarre, something unique. And you still had some holdovers from the days before, you know, the young guns of Hollywood. You still have your John Wayne movies that last well into the 70s. You still have your musicals and things like that, but you start to see, you know, what is acceptable as a movie change as the 1960s turn into the 1970s. You see this kind of resurgence in culture that comes from, you know, sometimes it comes from, you know, subversives. Sometimes it comes from people who are genuinely angry or, you know, have things to say about culture. Sometimes it's just people like George Lucas playing with the toys they've arranged in their minds. But you get this creative energy that comes out of a period of stagnation, and then you get new movements. And that's what we're dealing with right now. That's what we're heading into. You know, we're getting Captain America 4 and Deadpool 3 and Fantastic Four 72 and on and on and on. Sequel, reboot. I remember when the writer's strike was still going on just a few months ago, and someone made a post about, hey, here's all the movies that you're going to miss out on if this writer's strike continues. And it was all superhero sequel and reboot, superhero sequel, reboot. And I just commented underneath it, don't threaten me with a good time. Because honestly, do we need those movies? No. Obviously not. Yeah. Jonathan Frost, Rocky 4000. Yeah. And Simon Wood. Yeah, I know. I wish "and" did work in a hashtag. I don't like DND. I'm one of those people. You guys have seen Seth Skorkowski post about it on Twitter sometimes. I'm one of those ampersand people. I like the ampersand. I don't like the N. Because it's not Dungeons and Dragons, it's Dungeons and Dragons. But, you know, I understand what you're saying there, Simon Wood, and I appreciate it. Thank you. But yeah, that's where we are right now. Something has to change. Something has to move, and there has to be a whole bunch of different alternatives to, you know, come out and try to supplant the status quo right now. And so let's turn our attention back again to gaming. What do we have to, you know, what do we have to replace Dungeons and Dragons as it inevitably heads towards shuffling off its mortal coil? Right now, what we have is a lot of heartbreakers. We have a lot of games that are just iterations on D&D. We've got some that try something different. We have Savage Worlds, which has a different rule set, kind of a different system. We, you know, continue to have Palladium. It is still with us in various forms. We have iterations on D&D that, you know, change things a little bit more, like Dungeon Crawl Classics. We have yet to see some kind of new revolutionary system that's going to blow the doors off of everything and make us wonder why we were playing the old way to begin with. Curse of Yiga, I love Savage Worlds too. However, a lot of people, if you can actually get someone to play Savage Worlds, most of the time they get it. A lot of people can't get past aesthetic things with Savage Worlds. A lot of people see playing cards and immediately are just like, I'm out. I don't care. Max Liao from Legion of Myth doesn't want to play Savage Worlds because he hates the word bennies. So, you know, like there's reasons why people don't want to adopt Savage Worlds. They think it's too dense when they look at it on a surface level. I'm with you. I think it's a brilliant system. I love it. Aaron the Relentless here, Savage Worlds has always read like shit. I love Shane Hensley. I kind of agree. It's hard for people to understand just what exactly is going on until you sit them down at the table. But that's a marketing problem. And, if you're not able to talk someone into playing your game, you have to Shanghai them into playing it for them to get it. That's a problem. Walkie, just wait till you try MCDM. I can't ban you. I can't ban you. You're my friend. But yeah, that's what we're waiting on right now. And people can come at me with, you know, Shadow Dark. Shadow Dark ain't it, guys. I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. Like, it's got some cool ideas. It's got a lot of buzz and a lot of hype. I haven't read it, so I can't definitively say whether or not the system is brilliant, but I don't see how Shadow Dark is going to be the game that flips the table over. And, you know, now when you're talking to your normie friends about playing role-playing games and they go, oh, what's that? You say, oh, Shadow Dark. And they immediately get it the way that they do with D&D. That's not going to happen. I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. It's not going to become the new kind of generic term for role-playing the way that Dungeons and Dragons is. And that's what we're looking for right now. We are looking for that revolution. Some people are actively developing it. Some people are just waiting for it. I don't know where I am on that scale. I'm making products, but what I'm making are adventures and source books. I'm not making a rule set right now because I don't know that I can. I don't know that I'm equipped. And that's wonky, unfortunately. That's kind of where we are right now. What is the revolution? How do we get past this? I firmly believe in the ideas that Wonky and I are working on with Guts and Glory. I would love for Guts and Glory to be the revolution. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I am leading the charge, that I am going to completely change the way that role-playing games are. If I did that, you guys would be well within your rights to kick me out of your communities and forever turn off my show. But I at least have an idea. That's what I'm working with right now. I have an idea and I think it's a damn good one. There you go. Wonky will lead the revolution. And you know what? If he is leading it, I will be, I'll be right there behind him. Because, Wonky's a great guy. So that's what I think that's what I'm saying. I don't know that I am the answer, but I am offering you an answer. I'm offering you Guts and Glory, which we'll be talking about more as the month goes on. We're launching a Kickstarter this month. I'll have more details for that next week, but I am launching a Kickstarter. And Wonky's going to be right there with me on it. So that's what we're doing. We as gamers need to find a path forward. And Full Metal Dragon has a point here. The next revolution will never happen from any kind of OSR style of game design. As much as I hate to say it, I agree. I love the OSR. I love OSR games. I love the people in the OSR. Right now, the OSR is so hyper-focused on recreating this old style. What the revolution will need to do is reach back to that old style and take influence from it, but mix it with something else. Whatever this revolution is, we'll need the work done by the OSR. And by the way, it will also need the work done of the BroSR, because the BroSR have been talking about ideas that a lot of people have forgotten. So there's lots of ideas out there. There's lots of paths that we could take. And I'm committed to one. And I'm hoping that you guys will come along with me and enjoy what I'm putting out there. I hope it will be revolutionary. But whatever has to come next is going to take inspiration from the OSR. It's going to take inspiration from some aspects of modern games. And it's going to take inspiration from other places. And it's going to have to combine those things, because that's what D&D did. D&D took inspiration from pulp fantasy and wargaming and created a scaled down version of wargaming designed for small groups made up of individual units. So whatever comes next will have to combine the old and the new with ideas that we have not yet seen. And I do think that that's what I'm doing. Yes, Archer's Friend, this is clickbait. Yes, it is. That was the joke. Yeah. Surprise. Breaking news. There isn't any. Breaking news. Things decay. Things fall apart. There we are. So yeah. I've got ideas. I know kind of where I want gaming to go. I have an idea that I'm going to be pursuing. And I've got, you know, people who are going to be pursuing it along with me. And I hope that I can change some things. I hope that I can give people a new enjoyment. And I hope that I can, if not complete, you know, if not change things up myself, if not, you know, be the one to make the rule set, at least be another stepping stone for whoever is going to make the next rule set. So that's where we are right now. That's what we're looking at. We're looking down the barrel of the winds of change. We are looking for, you know, the way out of Lotus Land right now. And so, like, that's kind of where we are. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to end this with answers. I'm not going to be able to end this conversation tonight with definitively, this is where I'm going. What I can tell you is that I'm excited about what I'm working on with Wonky on Guts and Glory. I'm excited about some of the things that I see people like the Basic Expert working on. I'm excited by some of the stuff that Victor Gorchev is working on. There's cool stuff out there. There's people doing creative stuff. I'm eternally excited by Alex McCreese and Axe, because I think Axe is actually doing a little bit of innovation. At the very least, he is, McCreese is kind of restoring the sense of simulationism and this idea that to create kind of compelling emergent narratives and to create tense conflicts and areas where you know, tactical decisions or strategic decisions need to be made, you need to properly simulate the circumstances of battle. You know, that's a cool and maybe not entirely revolutionary idea, but it's something that has been lost, that is being restored, and that is being iterated on. So that's where we are, and that's where I am. And I'm excited to you know, see where this is see where this is going to take us. I'm excited to see some of the things that are coming down the pipe from my contemporaries, and I'm excited to see how hard I can push myself. And I'm pushing myself pretty hard right now. So let's see where this thing goes. Let's see in 5 years, 5 years from now, 5 years from this date, February 6, 2024. So February 6, 2029. Let's see where we are. Let's see where things are. I will be 34 years old. Let's see how much has changed and how much has stayed the same. Where is D&D and where are we as gamers who are tired of what has now become the gaming status quo? And I see this as a challenge to myself and to my contemporaries. We have already seen that D&D is a corpse dancing on strings that are being pulled by a multinational corporation just looking to get pocket change off of a name that you recognize. That's already been exposed. Now, what do we do? What's the alternative to this macabre puppet show being put on by Hasbro, which will eventually be put on by someone bigger than Hasbro? Tencent. I don't know. Let's say Tencent actually does buy the D&D IP. What alternatives do we have? We've got a couple people doing shadow puppets on the wall that represent some of these indie games that have a little bit of buzz. We've got a guy in the corner with an acoustic guitar, playing some songs that sound kind of cool. What's going to be the new thing that overtakes the giant? What is going to turn D&D into Studebaker? An old, forgotten name that we have fond memories of, but that inspired something new, but is now no longer an active intellectual property. What is going to finally put D&D to rest? What is going to finally let it lie and become the new thing that's going to push us all forward into the next iteration of our hobby? Because even though Packard and Studebaker are no longer companies, we still drive cars. Even though Planet of the Apes is no longer the massive franchise that it once was, we still have TV and we still have movies. Even though The Shadow is no longer, the big happening pulp character, we still have novels. Even though no one buys Black Terror comics anymore, we still have comic books, for now. The mediums still exist. But the specific intellectual properties, the specific items within those mediums have changed and moved on. So it stands to reason that role-playing games will continue into the future. It stands to reason that we will still continue to have this hobby, because we've had this hobby for a long time, even longer than we think. So role-playing games will continue. D&D will not. What's going to replace it? And that is where we're going to wrap up tonight. So guys, thank you for indulging me in this conversation, this rant. I know I've been all over the place, touched on a lot of different concepts, but for anyone who is genuinely upset by the clickbait, sorry, that was the joke. I thought it was funny. And I hope you did too. I'm still proud of that thumbnail. I think I'm going to sell that thumbnail to the highest bidder and just let them put their shocked face instead of the bonehead. Just let them put like their shocked face right where my bonehead logo is. You can stick Professor Dungeon Master in there. You can stick, God help him, Indestructiboy in there. Kablooey the Pirate. Ginny D. put her in there. Yeah. Sell it off to the highest bidder. That's what I'll do. Anyway, next week is going to be very special. I'm looking forward to it because I will have the Wonky on here. You've seen him in chat. The Wonky will be on here and we will be discussing our Kickstarter. It's happening. It's coming out. It's happening this month. We will be discussing the Kickstarter for Guts and Glory Volume 1, which for those of you who have not seen O Night Divine, if you want to get a taste of what we're doing, go check out O Night Divine on DriveThruRPG. You can get it for free, or you can, you know, pay a little bit, and that money currently is going to the Shields Memorial Fund for James Shields and his family who recently lost their son. But you can get that RPG, you can get that adventure, and you can see kind of where my mind is going. And I will tell you that what Wonky and I will be discussing, both of the adventures that will be present in Guts and Glory are iterating on what I did in O Night Divine and what Wonky did with the art in O Night Divine. And what he's doing in his own adventures. So I hope you guys will join us for that. I'm looking forward to talking all about this. And until next time, whether you rolled a 1 or a 20, I'm so glad that you rolled your bones with me, Ryan Howard, and I will see you guys next time. Have a good night.